Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Line with Barney.
I dominated.
Peter.
We're into that because we're horny for volleyball.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
Yep, I'll clap for myself.
Well, nobody else is going to treat you right. Treat yourself right, Jeremy.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. I'm your host, Kevin Barnett, joined, as always lately, Chris McGee and DJ Jeremy Rouché. Always glad to have you guys in the loft, sitting in the home court on a Monday, talking volleyball. We've got a great show planned for you today. Those of you logging into the site this morning have noticed a little bit of a change. We've moved over finally with Volleyball Mag. Big thanks to Volleyball Magazine and our combination with them, our continued marketing efforts. We've been put over onto their site. There's lots of new information on that site. They're trying to revamp their brand online. And the Net Live joining that group. So hopefully you guys can actually stream the show from there. Live if you're tuning in or at any time you wish. If you try to go to our site, you'll find the player over there on Volleyball Mag's website. Lots of great stuff on the show today. We have three great guests coming on. John Tawa, going to come on and preview Vegas, an event that we were actually at last year, Jeremy and I. Tom Sorensen, where are they now? Tom Sorensen, longtime member of the national team, Olympian in 1996, last man cut before 2000. We'll talk to him about life after volleyball, because I don't think I've seen Tom since the last day of practice.
I'll tell you,
the Olympics.
I've not seen Tom Sorensen since early 2000s, late 90s. It's been a long time for me.
I think I last saw him like September 21st of 2000.
2000.
He left. That was it. Gone. Went to the Olympics. Came back. I've never seen Tom since. Seen lots of Facebook posts from Tom, but haven't seen Tom in person.
Still funny, I'd imagine.
He says, don't blame me if it's boring, but I doubt that.
Yeah.
And also Kathy DeBoer, ABCA Executive Director. Going to be on the program. We'll talk about convention, what was back in December. Huge event, of course, surrounding the Women's Final Four down there in San Antonio. And we'll touch on some other stuff, an appearance last week by myself and Kathy on Bev Oden's show, Game Changers Live. Bev Oden, a loyal listener of the Net Live, started her own program with some co-hosts, a couple of the lovely ladies over there, and they've been having discussions about Title IX. They were celebrating the anniversary of it. I was not, but I was on the show.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting one. You can check it out, Game Changers Live. It's another Blog Talk product.
I think it's safe to say anyone who's ever known Bev Oden is a big Bev Oden fan. Classy, smart, and what a player she was, too, by the way.
Yeah, the Oden family, okay at sports. Just okay. A few Olympics, basketball, volleyball, track. I mean, come on.
Met Bev at Coley Kymen's birthday. We all went out to UCLA. It was a national championship game between UCLA and Long Beach State at Pauley for women. It happened to be Coley's birthday. That's where I met Bev. Good people.
She is.
Yeah.
I enjoyed being on her program. I was on for an hour.
You were?
An hour. I clicked off my cell phone. I think it said 56 minutes.
Did they get into you a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Me and three women in the room.
Oh, they must have. Did you say dumb things like, if you're not winning a national championship, you're doing a bad job? Like, did you do one of your Barneyisms and just ruin everything?
They played a clip from this show as my introduction that was talking about legislating the participation of men based on the interest of women. So that was the start of the whole thing.
Do you remember what your soundbite was?
Yeah, it was 2.5 minutes.
Oh, wow.
That they played.
Were you heated? Was it one of your classic rants?
No, it was one of those days where I was pacing myself.
Uh-huh.
Had some pauses, talking about it. Your voice was in there somewhere. I don't know. But, yeah, it was a good intro, and we talked. I mean, I thought it was a good rational discussion about the positives and negatives of Title IX. And I think that's what's missing outside of our show, her show, some other places. In the halls of power where it really matters, at the NCAA, at conference meetings. I mean, all this stuff. I think that we're missing some rational discussion about the possibilities of tweaking that thing. So we'll get into it. We'll talk about it when Kathy comes on the show. Save it to that point. Gentlemen, I had a great weekend. I was going to get the news right after this show on Monday, and it happened.
See the big smile on his
face? I got a job.
Congratulations is in order. We've been waiting a few years for you to say, I've gotten a job. I mean, at least Jeremy
it's just
and I
on
have.
The weekends, but I actually get paid to broadcast something besides volleyball.
It involves a paycheck.
Yeah,
for
I
once.
Get a paycheck for a different sport.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I'm now on the tour. I'm going to every Supercross event, minus this upcoming weekend, because I'm out of town. But I will be at every other Supercross for the entire season, doing all of their online content, myself and ex-rider legendary Jim Hawley. And we're doing pre-show, post-show, post-practice, lots of rider interviews. It's great. I'm standing in a hole while I'm interviewing the riders because most of them go about 5'6".
Are they really going to do that to you?
Oh, I stand down a jump as often as possible.
That is fantastic.
We had for Jim, because Jim's ex-rider, he's about 5'6", 5'8", maybe. And Jim's standing on a pallet. We cut a pallet for him that he carried around.
That's amazing.
Well, I carried it around for Jim, but whatever. Yeah. So it's lots of fun. I was down in San Diego this weekend. The event was in San Diego.
And you'll be coming back on Sundays, which means you will be doing this show. I need to know, for the record, when you were in negotiations, were you trying to fly back on Monday to miss the show? Or did you say, I need to be back Sundays because the Net Live is on Monday? Just tell us the truth now.
People hate the discussion, but really, flag football saved this show. Because I have to be back to coach flag football on Sundays. Now, I've pleaded to the league, look, I got this job. I'm going to be gone on Fridays and Saturdays. Can you schedule us on Sundays? So now I'm back every Sunday.
How about you changing the entire league?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bend it to my will. That's because, you know why? Because I put together 40 hours of videotape for the league about a year and a half ago.
That is Lynn Sanity.
Lynn Sanity. Way to throw that right in there. How about that guy?
It's one of the great stories ever in the NBA.
I think you trade Melo right now.
I remember a time where a guy came out of absolute nowhere to do what he's doing. And by the way, he's good. I mean, he's got good patience with the basketball. His vision is awesome. He's a great passer. Can hit a mid-range jumper. I mean, this kid is the real deal. I mean, I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but he's good.
He was almost cut like a week and a half ago.
Yeah. Went to the D League, right?
Lakers put a bid on him, actually, but he went to the waiver wire after the Houston. After he got released by Houston, he goes to the waiver wire, and it's like fantasy football, like the team with the worst record, goes in terms.
Okay. Yeah.
And the Knicks put a bid on him, too, and they were before the Lakers. But he was about to be released by them. It's not like they discovered him. They were about to release him, but they had to play him because everyone was hurt. Now he's saving D'Antoni's job.
He scored, what was it, first three games, he scored more points than anyone in history.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah, he has like LeBron. He had like LeBron
Jordan,
stats. He had LeBron
Shaq,
stats. And LeBron.
LeBron. I mean, that's
when
he's
when
above.
When you put like assists together with
he had
points,
like 35
he was with LeBron.
Points, 8 assists, and 5 rebounds or something
against
crazy.
Lakers, he had 38.
Took it to your Lakers, too.
Oh. Abused them, actually. Yeah, but any guard in the league is abusing my Lakers right now. Any guard that has any kind of decent speed, which is everybody.
The review I've heard on the kid is, hey, you can see him thinking. He's not going to overpower anybody, and he said, look, I'm not the physical specimen that a lot of these guys are. He just outthinks everybody else. Guy went to Harvard, for crying out loud.
It's funny, they asked Landry Fields, who was an All-American at Stanford, they asked him, did you know about this kid? Because, they were the same age, basically, and, he grew up in Palo Alto.
Yep.
And he goes, yeah, I knew who he was because when we would run in the offseason, we'd call him to come over. And every time after the pickup games, I'd be like, man, I wish you were my point guard. But Stanford didn't even want him. UCLA didn't want him. None of them even want him. So he went to Harvard.
It reminds me of Steve Nash.
Yeah, he's got some Nash in him.
Steve Nash coming out of St. Mary's. But the similar type story. I mean, the guy comes out of St. Mary's. He's in the WCC. I mean, okay, whatever. Nobody cared about Steve Nash. But Steve Nash is a thinking point guard, right? He's not a physical specimen. The guy just runs around. He's a freaking soccer player. Doesn't jump out of the gym. He's not the quickest guy in the world. But he outthinks and knows the game and creates opportunities for those guys that are the quickest guys in the world.
For our loyal chat room listeners that their panties are going to get in a bunch because we haven't tied it to volleyball yet, is there a volleyball story out there, a person we know that has kind of pulled a Jeremy Lin?
Came out of nowhere?
Maybe in the beach, I was trying to think.
No, Steve Timmons.
Came out of nowhere?
Not exactly, but close.
I didn't know that part of
Timmons the story. Timmons was, by all accounts, talking to people who were teammates with his back in that time, Timmons was kind of not really gelling, not really getting it done. He's in the gym, but not great. And then he got subbed in I think it was that opposite. He got subbed in one match and went off. And from then on, he was Big Red. Never came out. Went on the incredible run being the player that he was for the next 10 years. But it literally happened in one match. He got put in because somebody got hurt or somebody was playing poorly. Went in, never came out for a decade. Steve Timmons.
The guy I was thinking was Monroe Clark.
From obscurity to stardom.
Yeah. But honestly, though, I'm trying to think. I mean, Witte didn't really come out of nowhere. Witte was a pro athlete, you know, playing for, you know, played for the University of San Diego and then had a little cup of coffee with a couple teams in the NBA. And they all, you know, when he kind of came out, he was like literally going to Al Jansen's doorstep, knocking on the door and buying shorts from Al. Like he needed some board shorts. But, you know, and he came on the scene and he was great. But I'm just, I mean, just to go right into a tournament, basically is what I'm saying, and get these finishes. I can't remember someone doing them. I mean, Lynn is basically a starting point guard.
Yeah, but Lynn's been around.
Yeah, he's been around.
So he's been on the roster.
Yeah,
he's been in the
great
gym.
Point.
The question is, does he step on the court and then
it's
never
just funny
come
now
out?
The Warriors and the Rockets, all it's funny to hear those GMs like go, yeah, I
nobody had any,
2020,
nobody had
I,
any idea.
I wish we knew he was this good.
You never know the circumstances either that are going to make a player that good. You have to step into the right circumstance with the right coach, the right vibe,
circle.
The right players around you.
Well,
the
just
fact
goes
that
to
Melo's
show.
Not there helps because somebody else gets to touch the ball.
You know, it just goes to show that there are probably a lot of good, good players out there. And, you know, even in baseball, you know, football, but especially basketball, that guys in Europe, probably guys in the D League, that if they got the shot and the confidence and someone believed them, they were in the right system.
Look,
never know.
If you're on,
I mean, Kurt Warner wasn't he stocking shelves at
yeah,
the supermarket,
he was like at Home Depot.
And he was playing in the Arena League. He literally was working at a grocery store, and then he was on the Rams roster. And of course, what's his name? Green.
Sure.
That
Trent Green went.
Trent
down.
Green got down, went down, and yeah. Kurt Warner never came out for a decade.
There's some good ones on here. Gibb, Dahlhauser.
Yeah, nobody thought Phil would be as good as he is now, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I remember
but
seeing
did he
Phil
have
and Nick
moment,
for the
though?
First time.
He's like kind of a slow build, right?
Yeah.
Better finishes,
well,
better partner. He didn't go from I'm okay just kind of around to I'm winning every tournament.
No, I mean, he and Nick, when I saw him first, you know, they beat Fenoy and Blanton, who were the gold medalists.
Ed Bond threw Chad Strickland here.
Hey, Ed.
Eddie
Bond
in,
is honestly one of the funniest guys
type in Jason
that
Hughes.
I have ever been around. That's number one. But I remember
Axel
them
Hagar.
Beating maybe in 03, maybe 04 is a long time ago. I thought they beat maybe Dax and Fenoy or Dane and Fenoy. They beat Fenoy and somebody at that Fort Lauderdale tournament, and everyone's like, God, who are these guys? And they had a huge following because they were in Florida.
They were, yeah.
It's in front of all their friends. And then they beat Karch and Hermosa and Lambeau, took a third. And then that following year is when they, you know, they won a tournament against Stein, but Phil's a pretty good one. I mean, we didn't know him coming out
the
of college,
rise.
So that's a good
the
one. And Jake
rise, yeah.
Gibbs another good one too. These aren't guys that played Division I men's volleyball, and
right.
You knew who they were. So, you know, I remember Jake Gibbs coming like Utah, guys from Bountiful,
Utah.
Really? Yeah. So those two guys are pretty good examples. Now, Jeremy Lin's not the best player in the world like Phil is.
No, but if you're on an NBA
but,
team, whether
yeah.
you come from the D League, I mean, you're good.
But for him to
regardless,
do it in the, for him to do it in New York,
oh, no doubt.
At
well,
the
if,
Garden.
But even if you're on the tour, the MVP, if you're anywhere on that tour, you're good. If you're anywhere
yeah.
on the national team radar, you're good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
the thing, when we talk about stuff in this program or any sports program, we're talking about this guy's no good, that guy's good. We're talking about the tiniest percentage of difference between athletes.
Yeah,
and
no
he
question.
Had nothing to lose, too, so just go out there with confidence and play. He's like, they were going to cut me
do.
Anyways. No, I know, but if you can have that mentality...
Yeah.
He's like, they're going to cut me anyway, so let's
you,
just go do it.
You know what they say in baseball, but the difference between hitting like 260 and 300 is just a couple ground balls with eyes a week. You know, those ground
yeah.
balls that
yeah.
get through. And next thing you know, you're hitting 300, and you know, you're a guy that's in the league making millions.
This is why the steroids argument, you had all the people who said, oh, it doesn't make any difference. That was the kind of the mantra of those that were trying to defend the position of a Bonds or whoever else you want to throw in there. What's his name? Palmeiro or whomever else. That was their defense. Oh, it's not going to make a difference. These guys are great athletes. You know what does make the difference? An extra 4 feet. Because it's either a can of corn or it's a home run.
Yeah.
Or the extra 2 miles an hour that puts it past the shortstop.
It's not going to make
that makes a huge
yeah.
difference. And yes, you have to have the hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, those guys already know how to play.
Right.
But it's still going to make you better.
And that was the thing. Oh, it doesn't improve hand-eye coordination. Well, no joke. But people have that already. It improves speed. And so you can apply that hand-eye coordination in a better way. It adds speed and strength. So don't tell me it doesn't make a difference. It makes a huge difference. And then you get those extra 20 percentage points.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're on your way to a $5 million, a $10 million a year contract rather than $400,000.
So you're saying if I took roids, though, I couldn't go yard?
Well, imagine you on steroids.
You would spatchy all the way to where the boats are parked.
You on steroids, up in a club.
He would be busting out of that weird shirt.
Vegas, 3-4 in the morning. You're juiced, bud. You're feeling good. You're not tired because you don't drink your cockies. Like I've always told you, just once you sip on a couple, hates to drink. You know, maybe you're juiced up. Maybe you take a cycle. Dude, you're pogoing at 4.
Am I going to be getting paid millions if that's the case?
Yeah, possibly.
Do like a roid cycle?
Possibly.
Sweet.
Jeremy, do you know other DJs? Is DJ business? Do you guys have like conventions? Do you guys
there are
talk?
Conventions, yeah.
Yeah, you go, ever go to those? Because I was wondering, like, I ran into DJ Stephanie this week.
Yeah.
Works for Monster Energy all over the Supercross.
You mentioned
thought,
her name a couple times.
I know.
Off air, too.
I know.
Hasn't he?
We'll talk about it.
She's hot. I wondered if, you know, you two would know each other. Like, if I drop a Jeremy Ruscha.
Maybe not. She may know, like, the events that I do.
Okay.
I mean, the DJ world really is big. I mean, everybody and their grandmother thinks they're a DJ, for that matter. But there was the NAMM show in Anaheim in January, which is a big instrument convention. But they have, like, all the DJ stuff in one of the halls. And, you know, you go in there and you see huge...
Samantha Ronson.
Yeah, you see huge DJs to, you know...
The Who are the big names?
Wedding DJ. Z-Trip was there. The Beat Junkies were there. I mean, it was...
European guys are a little bit bigger than American guys in general. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Seems like
I mean,
a bigger gig over there.
They're definitely more well-known in that country. Like, if you like DJs or in the DJ world, like, you'll know who Z-Trip is. You'll know who A-Track is. Like, you'll know those guys.
A-Track has had a bunch of stuff on music, right? He's been kind of crossing over, like, Timberland, kind of?
He's the guy that did Barbra Streisand. Duck Sauce is the...
That's why I know A-Track. Okay.
Barbra Streisand. He was also Kanye West tour DJ for a while.
Gotcha. Okay. I just wondered.
Were you guys into the Grammys?
Yes.
No.
Kevin.
Sorry.
Had a feeling.
I had kids and I was asleep.
I have kids. It's hilarious.
With kids jumping on me.
Start today. Your kids are going to bed.
Kids were out at 9, although I was asleep in my son's room till about 10. It's like, I'll put you to bed, Reese, or I'll put myself to bed.
Yes.
I was freaking wiped from Saturday.
I thought the Grammys did a good job with their Whitney tribute.
Okay, let's.
Should we get it out of the way now?
Yeah, let's talk about Whitney.
And you know what? We're not going to be able to tie Whitney to volleyball at all.
No.
So that might bump some people out.
No, we won't. But I think of Whitney Houston. She had an amazing career, of course. You can talk about all the amazing stuff that she did as far as being an artist and how she dominated the 80s, right? I always think of 91 and the Super Bowl. And that moment where she sang the national anthem, and this is how it relates to volleyball.
I remember,
you
got
to listen to the national anthem every time. And that pride behind that moment with the Jets flying over. I think it was at Tampa Bay. I think is where it was. It was in Florida.
Oh, was it not in L.A.? You're right.
It was in Florida.
Yeah, great call. Actually, you're right.
Maybe it was Miami. It was unbelievable, moment, the power of what she did.
I still have that as the best national anthem.
I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Wasn't that Gulf War time?
It was right after.
Yeah. They just brought the troops home, and they had the flyover, and they had the flag.
And she absolutely nailed it.
Oh, I thought we just started the war.
Started it?
Yeah, because I remember, it was announced, and then the Super Bowl happened.
Well, the war lasted like a week.
So, right.
But
because we had an intelligent Bush in the office. But anyways, okay. we can't go off onto politics.
Yeah.
But I just, when I think of her, I think of that, and then you have the bodyguard and other stuff. But really, that the vision of her was kind of a low camera shot of her singing, and you could see the Jets going over.
Yeah,
and
it was amazing. And I thought Jennifer Hudson absolutely nailed it.
Last
and,
night.
You know, she's had some tragedy in her life, too. So for her to be able to go out there and do that, you could tell she was about to get real emotional, just basically left the stage. But to nail that song like that, you know, it just showed that she's probably sang it a million times because growing up, a lot of those singers, who did they idolize? What songs did they sing? Whitney Houston's. So they know them.
And that's not an easy
song. So on a day's notice, you can just go out there and crush it is amazing. It just shows the talent out there. What did she take, 7th on American Idol? I saw that tweet somewhere.
I don't remember.
Maybe Rich Eisen tweeted that or something.
I just think
that's amazing that she didn't win American Idol.
The Grammys did a good job. Like, it wasn't all about Whitney, but you had to at least acknowledge it, and they did a good job with it.
Yeah. You know, LL Cool J is pretty smooth, too. I worked an event, Super Bowl event with him back in 2004. I was the MC, but he was really the guy that came in and MC'd for about 15 minutes and probably made $25,000. But he was – I remember when we did a rehearsal, and we were there like 2 days before, and, you know, I was there for hours working with the people. He showed up literally. He was so nice, met everybody. He just nailed it. That guy is LL Cool J.
Oh.
He hosted last night. He's smooth. But he came out. He came out. You could tell he was a little bit off the cuff.
Yeah.
you know, talking about Whitney and the world of music. He was so impressive.
Let me put a link up.
Somebody also asked if she lip synced this. Not a chance.
No way. She what?
Somebody asked on the message board if she lip synced this. Not a chance.
Not back then. 91? I don't think so.
Not at all. Of course not.
I mean, we haven't touched on the disaster that she became. I mean, I think of Whitney now, and I think of a clip from The Soup that they show all the time. She's yelling across the room, like, kiss my ass! Oh, my goodness. Like,
Whitney.
Let's
tie it to volleyball. How many, you know, there's been great players. How many great players have kind of just fallen off? Of course, it's a little different because they're not making the money.
Due to drugs?
How many guys are, whether it's drugs or just, you know, falling off. And
Eck?
Yeah, well,
you know,
go drugs.
Eck,
he's the man,
Eck,
isn't he?
Yeah, but Ack did come back and win at about, 38, 39, won the Hermosa Open.
He's still a pretty good player now.
Yeah.
It's really
amazing. Ack is one of those guys. And if you ever have a chance out there in the volleyball world to, you know, go to a six-man event or go to a Manhattan Open where he still sometimes plays in that, or go down to 16th Street in Hermosa on the weekends because he's religiously played
there. That place
there.
Looks the same as it looked in 1990.
Yeah.
They're the same guys doing the same thing.
Ack,
I don't know how those people make a living.
Such a great, pure volleyball player, setter, hitter. He just does it all, and he's got this aura about him, and that's why he's loved around here. That's why he's like an icon. You know, he's won 20 tournaments, whatever. I'm not sure on the number, but he's an icon. People grew up loving him and worshiping him in this town. I mean, he's just one of those guys that, like, yeah, he's done some bad things and some train wreck things, but, man, you watch him play the sport, and you're like, this guy, he's Ack.
No, he's still very pure, even though he's
I saw him yesterday. We were playing in the morning, and he was riding his bike by. We're like, Ack, and he looked over, and he's like, what's up? And he's going down to 16th Street, and he's got his bag on his back, and he's going to play.
Yeah, it's that 16th Street crowd, I go there, and it's like a time warp. You just go by there. You're like, what?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah,
you guys are still here?
Yep.
And it's 10:30, and they got the Coronas open.
Do what you got to do. Living the life.
Man, when he beat Furby and Jennings with Louis in Hermosa finally, after all those years to finally capture Hermosa title, I will never, ever forget. You know, usually after, there's no more Sangria, but
my first year.
There was always, it was always after the Hermosa Open. There's the great party at Sangria, and it's all about the champion walking in, you know, whenever he can get there, and after the media and all that stuff. And I remember Ack walking in. And it was never like any other champion I'd ever seen. He walked into Hermosa after winning Hermosa. The place stopped, the round of applause, and him just high-fiving people walking by. And you can see, you know, a guy who didn't show a lot of emotion, but for Ack, I bet that was one of the great moments of his career. That was everybody he knows. He's been to that place a million times. But to walk in as the Hermosa champion, I just remember feeling really good for him at that time.
Somebody's wondering where Ack is now. Well, we've got the where are you now?
He'll be there.
He's still there
all week.
You can go down any day, Monday through Sunday. Ack will be at 16th Street. Hey, we've got a great program planned for you. John Tawa coming up after the break. Talk about a little bit of juniors for a couple minutes. I'll be asleep. Geeter will be fired up. Tom Sorensen, where are they now? Later in the program, the ABCA College Volleyball Weekly, Mike and Jay. Verbal sparring will continue, as usual, I'm sure. And then Kathy DeBoer, ABCA Executive Director. Much more to come. Beautiful Monday, The Net Live.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to sports' biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com and subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Welcome back in. The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Kevin, Jeremy, and Chris in the home court. If you want to communicate with us during the week, facebook.com/thenetlive or thenetlive@gmail.com. This show is causing me all sorts of problems on my post show for Supercross because I have to say facebook.com/supercrosslive instead of thenetlive. Got my lives mixed up.
At least you're saying something,
dude. A lot of pressure.
What is that? It's a lozenge.
Lozenge.
You just put it right next to me.
A lot of pressure for me this weekend. Like, I came out of the day pretty tired just because there's, you know, like any new job. You go to a new job, no matter what it is, there's 75 things to try and remember on the first day.
You're nervous, new people, you want to impress them.
Just make sure it all goes smoothly. And yeah. Then it all came off fine. And I'm sure next time I'll only have 55 things to try and remember because the other 20 will be already ingrained, okay to go. But, Chris, you know this. You have to get the certain verbiage down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can't say Monster Energy AMA Supercross. Can't say that. You can say Monster Energy Supercross, but if you say Monster Energy AMA Supercross, you have to say Monster Energy AMA Supercross and FIM World Championship.
That's a lot.
Yeah, because it's a big lawsuit, and you have to make sure you say the right stuff.
I don't even know what you're saying right now.
Well, it doesn't matter. Just the point is that you have to get their verbiage correct, their branding correct, in the moment, while you're trying to think of what the heck you're going to say next, and ask the guy a question next to you.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Once you get that down, it's like literally your mindset and that weight of yours. I hate stuff like when you're doing new things and you know that that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I always have that little card. You know, you always have little footnotes.
I had the cards. Yeah. I had the cards and I'm trying to look down without looking too obvious on the camera. I mean, this show has been a little bit easier. And this show now, of course, we're in a great flow after 3 years on the air. It's much easier to identify who we're talking about, why we're talking about it, what the dynamic is. But even on this program, if we're doing something, I can write it down and I can zone out while you talk to John Tawo, as you will hear in just a second. And I can get other stuff done. You can't do that when I'm on camera for the entire shoot. So
your hatred for juniors volleyball or lack of knowledge is why you get ripped on Bev Odenkirk's show for an hour. Just having no clue about the women's game or anything else.
It's like poker. I'm not going to do the math. I'm going to play by feel. And that's how the show runs. All right, we've got our guest on the line. Give him an appropriate introduction here for your juniors world, McGee. The McGee world of juniors is what it ought to be after two years.
I love juniors volleyball, and so does this man right here. He has done a ton in the world of indoor volleyball at the juniors level, male and female, promoting the sport. He's got a great website, prepvolleyball.com, tons of articles. The message boards are really what gets a lot of people going. Message boards are viewed by literally thousands and thousands of people. And he spends a lot of his life traveling around and helping promote the sport. Ladies and gentlemen, John Tawo. JT, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
How's it going, man? I know you have a huge week here with Las Vegas, so let's jump right into that. I know there's tournaments all over the country, but tell us about Las Vegas and what makes this tournament so special.
Well, I mean, the big thing is you've got the Southern California teams make the jump right over for a few hours. So you've got a critical base of fantastic teams already, and when you have that base, all the other top teams in the country want to come be part of it because they want to challenge themselves against the best.
Yeah,
and that's what it's been. And you know, for many years now, I think this tournament's in its 36th year. This has been a tournament for seniors, really. Now the recruiting game has changed a bit so that kids are committing earlier and they're seeking commitments and scholarship offers a lot earlier. But this tournament has always been focused on the seniors and specifically those who hadn't yet committed, and that's why the showcase sprang up in conjunction with the tournament.
Now, John, tell us about the senior showcase. I believe it's going to be Friday night. How many kids and kind of how that thing started?
We're on our sixth year doing the senior showcase, and I actually just looked, and I think we're going to be at 646 kids.
Wow.
Over three 90-minute sessions at Cashman Field Center. We're going to use all 18 courts. We'll have more than 200 college coaches there. And hopefully we'll be able to create a few love connections.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. I said it started a few years ago when Ojan, who I know is a frequent contributor to the show, suggested it's something we do. And I think I was on last year to mention, I thought if we got 50 to 75 kids, we would be doing well. And the first year we had 150 kids, and the next year we had over 700, and you know, we've been over 600 every year since, and we would be a lot more, except we cut off registration now 10 days in advance to allow our technical people to do what they have to do, and it creates a lot of frustration, and we get a lot of phone calls after the fact. But you know, registration's open for 7 weeks. You've got 7 weeks to get it done. There are, you know, lots of emails going out there and information on the SCVA site. So, you know, it's too bad for people who missed the boat on it. We feel sorry about it. In the past, we used to open up registration to a few hours before the event itself, and it just created such unwieldy chaos. We stopped doing that.
Yeah, I think that was a good move. Now, you know, we were talking about Jeremy Lin on this show earlier, the New York Knicks point guard, how he kind of came out of nowhere. Put into perspective just how many kids are unsigned, unseen, and they go to the senior showcase and end up working out, as you say, a love connection. They find a school and get a scholarship, and just that proud feeling that you guys have when that happens.
Well, let's put it this way. My job is covering girls high school volleyball, you know, high school and club volleyball, year-round, 100 hours a week. That's what I do. And if I were to look down the roster of the 640 kids, I'd say there would be 450 whose names I just don't recognize. I don't recognize them. Now, if I don't recognize them, chances are the college coaches don't know them, and they're looking to make a name for themselves. Now, last year, I walked around and I talked to the college coaches who were in attendance. Now, one of the good things that we do is we don't allow any parents in to the venue during the showcase, so the coaches have unfettered access.
That's maybe the best rule.
They don't have. I'm sorry?
That's one of the best rules I've ever heard.
Yeah, the coaches, we try to keep club coaches out too, except for the ones who are working the showcase, because we want the college coaches to be able to focus on these kids and these kids alone. Not have somebody in their ear talking about how this kid is so great. Let them see it with their own eyes. That's the whole idea. But the point is, in my talking with these coaches after the showcase, they said that there were probably 150 to 200 out of the 600-odd kids we had last year who could play Division I ball. I mean, 200 kids I didn't even know about, hadn't even heard of. And it's shocking. I mean, there's, you know, Lauren Barfield is a standout at Washington. Her sister was there last year, touching over 10 feet, 6'4". Why in the world, I mean, she was very, very raw, obviously, but why in the world that person is not known? I don't know. But the truth of the matter is, it's a big country, and if you don't engage in self-help, sometimes you're going to be in trouble out there. If you're not playing for a big club, or you're in a rural pocket somewhere in middle America, it's going to be a challenge for you. So getting out here is a good idea, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. Because honest to God, if you don't engage in self-help, you're really behind the eight ball.
John, how long have you been covering girls' juniors volleyball?
I think this is my 13th year doing it.
13th year. Now, we're going to have Kathy on later in the show. We're going to talk to her about the growth. But just how much have you seen it grow at the level, you know, that age 12 to 17 in the last few years?
Well, I would say that I haven't seen growth in the last couple of years, but from the first year I've been covering it through the first 10 years, I think the growth was astronomical. The interest, the national interest was astronomical, and it's fueled not only by prepvolleyball.com, but also by all of the technological innovations that have cropped up over the last few years that have allowed people on one coast to follow what other kids and teams are doing on another coast almost in real time. And because of the national nature of the sport now, you know, there are rivalries that are created across state lines. And so it really does spark a nationwide interest. It's not a California sport anymore. While Southern California continues to be fantastic and NorCal's really strong, you know, Kansas City volleyball is incredible right now. Dallas volleyball is ridiculously good. Chicago's always been good. Louisville's really good. You know, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Cincinnati, Ohio, Cleveland.
Yep.
These are places you wouldn't think of as traditional volleyball hotbeds, but once you get, you know, some good coaches in place an opportunity to create scholarship chances for you and for other people in your program, all of a sudden the sport starts to take off.
John, this is Kevin here, and we've talked a lot about Title IX and about the opportunities that have been created for young women via volleyball, 10,000 scholarships available every year. And the discussion turns to boys volleyball. And the critics will say, oh, even if you had equal scholarship money, you wouldn't have equal participation of boys in volleyball because it's not the only driver for girls volleyball participation, scholarship money. I think that scholarship money is a huge part of the driver for that, and then it kind of becomes a snowball rolling downhill. But it seems like your senior showcase is proof positive that the scholarship dollars that are out there are really one of the huge drivers behind the growth you've seen in the last 10 to 13 years.
There's no question about it, Kevin. People who sit there and say that, you know, it's not about the scholarship, I think are deluding themselves. I preach constantly to my audience that it shouldn't be about the scholarship, because especially the club game, it should be about so much more than that, about the camaraderie, about the travel, about the maturation process, about the satisfaction that comes with getting better. But the reality is, all you have to do is look at the well-developed club system for the girls game and how many hundreds of thousands of people are participating, as opposed to the still neophytic stage of the boys game, and you know that that's a scholarship issue. And there are over 300 Division I women's volleyball programs, most offering a full complement of scholarships. Yeah, there are people are chasing those, no question about it.
John,
go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I'm often asked by men's coaches, you know, high school coaches, why aren't you doing the same for boys? Why aren't you doing this for boys? And the answer for me, first and foremost, is, well, I don't have time to do it. I can barely do what I do as it is. But the reality is, you know, when you cover volleyball nationally, national rankings tend to drive what you do, and there are now 49 states playing volleyball for girls, all playing in the fall. So you can have a national ranking that makes sense. In the boys' game, there's still only, 15, 18 states that play the sport, some at a club level, some at a high school varsity level, but some play in the spring, some play in the fall, some play in the winter, and it just doesn't lend itself to the same kind of treatment.
John, what's your take on you know, when I was first coaching, there was a 16th division at Vegas that there no longer is, but there is still some 16th teams that kind of joined because they had a junior and senior. I remember our Shaq team playing a team from OVA that was predominantly a 16th team. What's your take on adding kids, to be able to come to this tournament?
Well, it's interesting because I was looking at the rosters last night and I noticed that there are some 16s teams again in the 17-year-old field. And Coast's team with Brittany Abercrombie is going to be there, and there are a couple of other 16-year-old teams. And last year, Ann Davenport, who's the SCVA commissioner, told me that wasn't going to happen anymore. That, you know, she wanted to go back to what it was, which was a 17s and 18s tournament, and that she was going to clamp down. Now, I haven't spoken to her, so I don't know why we've got 16-year-old teams in there again. I mean, they wanted, if there's a convention center now, you know, it was not Cashman. Historically, the problem with this tournament is you've had an 18-court facility at Cashman and then 45 different high schools throughout Las Vegas and Henderson. It really was a mess. It was a challenge for college coaches to get to. And now that the convention center has come online, and if the convention center is going to be there year in and year out, this may be something that the SCVA looks to expand and bring in 16-year-old teams and maybe even 15-year-old teams, because that trend is happening across the country as well. The tournament in Omaha, which is the other big tournament that this weekend, also has 15 teams. There's a tournament in Chicago at the Great Lakes Center and other facilities in Chicago that's going to have 15s and 16s years old as well, and the Capitol Hill Classic in Washington, D.C. as well.
John, real quick before we let you go, give us the 17s and 18s teams, just maybe the top teams that you're looking at to make a big splash this weekend.
Well, focusing on Las Vegas, because that's where we're going to be. You know, there are 15 of the top 30 teams in the country in the 18s divisions in the 18th division will be there. They're spread out amongst the pools with some pretty curious seeding. In fact, Ojan's the number one seed, and in his pool, he's got a high-performance team that he's got to go up against that's ranked 38th. But you've got, look at Club Red, first and foremost. They won the Fiesta Classic from Arizona. They're a very seasoned team, played together for a long time. They have been a top team for several years. I expect them to come into this Las Vegas tournament and do well. Austin Juniors, the defending 17 Open national champions, are in this tournament as well. I think they have finally had their full team back. They were out a few kids early. They're seeded pretty low. I think they're seeded 23rd overall. But they're a very strong side. And they've added Molly McCage, the number one senior ace in the country, middle going to Texas. They should be very, very strong. Although they'll get a challenge from Imi Iki, the Hawaiians, on the first day as well. Other teams to look at, you know, the Wave team, Orange County, some of these Southern California teams are really strong. Laguna, Coast, obviously, is very strong. Sleeper team to look out for is the Washington Volleyball Academy from Seattle. They're a very good team. On the 17s, quickly, the number one team in the country, T Street, is there. I'm looking forward to seeing them play. They are loaded with kids, all tall, all athletic, big bodies, coached by Troy Tanner. That team's a very strong team. They also went to the Fiesta and won, although there wasn't that much competition for them, I don't think. But look for them to do really well. You know, I think I misspoke by saying Club Red won at the Fiesta Classic, because actually they came to the Speakeasy Tournament that Saddleback and Coast Run this year and won that one. So that, my mistake for that. But T Street's very strong. Texas Advantage has two of the best middles in the country. They're the number two seed overall. A kid going to USC, Ebony Duanabu, and another kid going to Cal. And these kids are, you know, talk about big leapers, big, strong middle attackers, really fun to watch. So I think there are 22 nationally ranked teams, and the 17 is going to be there as well. It should be a really exciting tournament, lots of high-level play this early in the season, and hopefully foreshadowing an incredible club season.
John, great job. Thank you so much. PrepVolleyball.com. If you're interested in volleyball at all and don't know about it, please go over there. Become a member. It's a great thing. And, John, thanks for all you do for especially, you know, seniors, but just for the sport in general. We
thanks, John.
It.
All right, man. My pleasure. Take care.
All right.
Bye.
John.
Good info. Good job, Chris.
Barney woke up for a minute, too. I mean, he actually was listening.
I had a little something. The Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Up next, where are they now? Tom Sorensen right on the other side of the break. And still to come, the ABCA College Volleyball Weekly. And Kathy DeBoer, Executive Director, El Presidente, El Jefe of the ABCA.
She came on one time and gave us an award. It's exciting.
Got it right there.
There it is, the trophy.
Looks like a Dundee. You don't have to find the best college coaches. They find you at Spire Institute. Spire's postgraduate volleyball academy wants athletes. Spire delivers customized volleyball training and competition, led by head coach John Hawks, athletic development with Michael Johnson Performance, and educational options, all in Olympic-grade facilities. There is no better way to impress college coaches and increase scholarship opportunities. Spire Institute. Postgraduate men's and women's programs in multiple sports. It's not taking a year off, it's adding a year to your future. Sign up today at spireinstitute.org. Oh, pep it up, Jeremy.
I don't know if anybody's noticed so far, but yeah. All the songs are love themed because tomorrow's Valentine's Day.
It is Valentine's Day, and I need some help with some presents. We're going to get into that at some point on the show today. I got to figure out.
Hope you guys
what I'm getting for my wife.
Started thinking about that before now.
I've been thinking about it. I'm stuck.
Tweeting back and forth with a friend of mine that I played at Northridge, and he now coaches at SC Camp Green, and he talked about beating Pepperdine, and he and I were just walking down memory lane talking about loving beating the Dine, and Barney got a little chipping on Twitter and kind of went at me a little bit. Just made me think of our next guest.
I'm surprised I didn't get anything back from that.
First of all, I didn't catch it till way
I'm not
later.
Even on Twitter very often.
You sent it at midnight. I wasn't looking at Twitter anymore, and I got it the next day and didn't care anymore about you.
Oh my gosh. All right, let's try this. Let's see if this is right. This is so perfect in more ways than one.
Yes. First of all, this guest, Barney, He knows sitcoms like nobody does.
He knows
every
TV.
Episode of Cheers, Welcome Back, Cotter, my favorite, The White Shadow, won a national championship in 1992.
Do you have one of those?
I do not have one of those, and I will be honest with you, he carried the Dime. Carried him! He carried my friend Lee LeGrand to a title. Go ahead, Barney, take the rest. Olympic team member.
Olympic team member in 1996. Last Man Cut 2000. I don't think I've seen him since the last day of practice back in 2000. Often wondered what he's been up to. He's a fine Piniente player.
How'd that 2000 team do?
He was glad he wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
Might have been better if we had some of the leadership of this man. Welcome to the Net Live and back to the volleyball world. Tom Sorensen. Tom.
Wow.
What's up?
All right.
Tommy, when is the last time I saw you? I cannot even remember. Where are you and what are you doing?
Yeah, he's got a 714 number, but I think he's in Wisconsin.
I am in Wisconsin. I just never changed my number when I moved back because it seemed like all my friends have my number. I didn't. It's too lazy to go through the rigmarole of sending out the new number and re-updating all that junk, so I just kept it. And seeing as long distance is really a non-issue these days, so I just kept the same number.
I'm on board with all that. Tommy, you were the last man cut in 2000, kind of the end of your career. We'll get back to some of the great things you did during your career, but talk about that moment, and that seemed like it ended up being the end for you.
Well, it wasn't completely the end, but my mother blames you guys doing badly on me being the last person cut, and she kind of got this weird guilty joy out of you guys doing so bad, and I was like, Mom, these guys are my friends. I still want them to do well. I take no joy out of this whatsoever. But, yeah, it was a weird moment. It's something I never really thought about in my volleyball career. You never think about what's my last day of practice going to be like. But I just remember walking out of the gym and just started crying, and I was like, wow, 7 years of my life just done like that. But I did play 1 year in Spain. I played with Matt Furbringer on Unicaja, where we won the Spanish title and Spanish Cup and all that good stuff, and played in the Champions League, and we're like, I don't know, I think we were 6-6 in the Champions League or something. So it was a pretty good year, and then I was just kind of I probably could have held on for a couple more years playing overseas if I'd wanted to. I mean, I did well in Spain, so. But I just kind of, I don't know, I was just kind of over, like, living abroad for 6 months, coming home for 6 months, living abroad. I just didn't want to do that anymore. It's just kind of over volleyball, so.
Yeah, unfortunately, at that time, the money not quite what it became about 8 years later, or 5 years later, maybe.
Yeah, I kind of hit this, I remember when I was in college, it was like, you know, Karch and Timmons are signing for millions of dollars and 500 grand, and then, like, I get done, and it's all like, ooh, you can get, you know, I mean, it's still good money for playing a sport, but then, like, I hit the valley, and then all of a sudden after I left, it went up again. So
yeah, you, me, and Sullivan all hit that pretty good. We stayed right in that valley and didn't get out of it. Talk about, Tom, tell us about the transition period, deciding what to do. Once you decided you were done living abroad, didn't want to go overseas for 6 months, and wanted to be more involved in being in the States and looking for something else to do.
I don't know. My transition moving back to Wisconsin was just kind of, I went home for like a week to visit my family, and I was like on my plane back, and I just kind of said to myself, what am I going back to really? I don't, you know, I'm besides my friends, like all my family's here in Wisconsin, parents, aunts, uncles. I grew up living next door to my grandfather and across the street from my aunt, so a very, very close-knit family. So I just kind of decided there and then on my plane trip back to California that I was going to move back to Wisconsin and just live like a normal civilian.
Hey, Tom, do you have any involvement in volleyball now? Have you ever thought about getting into coaching, training, anything like that?
I have not played volleyball in, I'd say, probably 6 or 7 years. I have, like, gone to help some friends who coach, and I'll serve balls, and I'll, you know, maybe snap some balls at them from the end line or something. The arm's still good, but really no desire to play. I was thinking about maybe making a return, like, I think at 45, like the Golden Masters for USVBA or whatever.
Just returning and hitting that D-ball?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know if I'll be getting any D-balls. I'll probably be, you know, hitting front row balls only. But, you know, see, the arm's still good, so never had any problems with that.
Well, so, Tommy, what have you been up to for work then? I've heard a variety of rumors throughout the years, but really I no idea what's actually been happening with you. I know probably back in there, Wisconsin, with your family, you've been hitting the strudel, as I always enjoyed doing, your parents would bring it. But other than that...
Oh, it's funny, I've actually just been sort of like bartending, service industry stuff. You know, simple lifestyle, good money. But it's funny, you talk about hitting the strudel. I actually had lunch a few years back with my ex that you know very well, BJ Bedford.
Right.
And like one of the first things she said to me is like, "Wow, I thought you'd be a lot fatter." Oh, I was like, "Oh, thanks, a compliment, I guess, that I'm actually skinnier."
Yeah, BJ never wanted to pull punches when it came to stuff
no.
like that.
No, gave her a hug. She put her arms around me. He's like, "I thought you'd be fatter." I was like, "Oh, great." But I was not surprised to hear that McGee had to bring up the Northridge Pepperdine thing before I even got on the air. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's talked a lot about here, and Tom, we all know that I was in my years 9-2 against the Dine, but and I remind guys like Dane and Lee and guys that I see that happened. But
I'm
of
like
course, 8-0. You did get the ring, so let's talk about what you were able to do at Pepperdine that Kevin Barnett was not, and that is win a national championship for Marv. I remember that year clearly, 1992, and I remember you being one of the stars of the game in the men's indoor time back then, along with Coley and guys like that, Ivy and Hilliard and all those great players that were in our generations. But just that run that you guys made was really incredible, and I use it coaching because you guys really came together about mid-season and just caught kind of fire. Can you kind of go over that last couple of months for you guys?
Well, actually, I think one of the not to stroke your ego anymore, but one of the big moments we had when we actually went into Northridge and won at Northridge.
I remember.
And that was kind of like the pressing point. It was kind of like, all right, we can do that. You know, they'd always been like the monkey on our back, Northridge, for some reason. This group of misfits you guys had always just had our number for some reason. The Island of Misfit Toys that was Northridge.
But you loved
it. I don't know. It was, oh, yeah, absolutely. Some of my best friends still. You know, we've gotten back in touch with Coley a little bit. We haven't chatted too much, but hopefully I'll hang out with him sometime soon. I still need to get out to Southern California sometime soon. But I don't know. It was just kind of a weird, like, we just got this confidence going, and we just started to believe, and we went through, and we had drills that we'd never won as the first team. We started winning these drills, and like, we were going into our match against Long Beach State for the then WEVA championship. You know, we'll always be the defending WEVA champions.
Yeah. The last year of the WEVA.
But I remember talking to my friend in college, this guy named Bill, and we were playing Long Beach State. He's like, "So what do you think?" He's like, "Oh, I think we're going to win." He's like, "I know you're supposed to say that, but he's like," I was like, "No, we're going to win." Like, I went into that believing we were going to win, and it's just, I know, it just felt like we deserved it, and I also got crapped on by a bird twice in that week, so I think it was some kind of good luck.
All right, Tommy, I got a question for you from that year. Better foreigner on their team, Alex Hagar playing for Northridge. Axel Hagar or Alon Grinberg playing for Pepperdine?
Well, it had to be Alon Grinberg.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, Axel was great, and Tom will attest to this. I mean, Axel did for our program in a couple years. I mean, he really was the guy on that left side and just such a great player. But Alon was there for 1 year. And really, I mean,
crazy.
Not only Chip being a freshman and really starting to come into his own late in that season, but Alon was so steady, Tom.
Yeah, he was, you know. I mean, he was just, yeah, the guy had a great arm. I wish that we had the rule back then about the net serves because, man, I would have had so many more aces and so did he. I was a master at hitting the top of the tape with my serve.
Yeah, he had that high toss jump serve too.
Oh yeah,
I remember just that whip, that lefty whip. Where is he now? Is he in Israel? Have you kept in touch with him?
I just got a friend request from him on Facebook like 3 days ago, and I'm not caught up with him yet. But I was like, oh my God, talk about a blast from the past.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that he was 29 years old playing against us when we were 19 is no big deal either.
You've all catch 27, same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom. You mentioned good arms. You talk about good arms, and when I think of you and think of you as a player, I always talk about the arm. You could put you in the middle, at the opposite, outside. It didn't really matter. Was that something that you were taught, or is that just how you ended up hitting the volleyball when you came to the sport?
You know what? I really don't know why. I mean, I just learned, like, I guess with a good motion, because I could always hit, 200 balls a day and never have a problem with my arm, and I guess it was just a lucky thing. I have no idea, like, how it happened. I mean, I had a good high school coach, but it wasn't like some long, drawn-out process where it's like, you got to do this and do that. It was just kind of the way it happened. I remember one of my first conversations with Matt Furbringer, who always had kind of shoulder problems, and he was like, yeah, I remember my first practice with you. You went through practice, and they just kept sending you ball after ball after ball after ball. And so I was thinking to myself, I'll see how he is tomorrow. And the next day, you hit ball after ball after ball after ball after ball. And it was just, I don't know, I guess it was the way I was built or something. I have no idea.
Hey, Tom.
I had chicken legs, but a good arm.
Hey, Tom, Tom, will they honor the 92 team now that it's the 20-year anniversary, which absolutely shocks me that it's been 20 years?
I know. It's, I do the math on some of this stuff now. It's mind-blowing. It's hard to believe that. I was saying to someone the other day, I realize the year I played in the Olympics is now someone getting their driver's license away.
Yeah. That's crazy.
You know, some kid was born in that year is now like getting their driver's test right now. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Hey, Tommy, we know you watched the 2000 team and cheered them on despite the fact you weren't there, but how much have you followed the national team since that point?
I've kind of, you know, I've watched some of the stuff on like on Versus and stuff, the World League and all that. I'll catch it when it's on. You know, I don't bend over backwards, and, you know, sometimes people tell me things, and I'm like, I don't know who that person is. Oh, really? He's, you know, the starting middle blocker for the U.S. national team. That's kind of, I don't know. People always, one of the questions I always get is like, why don't you play volleyball anymore? Why, you know, I'm just, you know, I burnt out on it somewhat, but it's also when you're accustomed to playing something at a certain level and you can't do that anymore, to me, it's just not that fun. It's like,
yeah.
So, there, you know, 10 years ago, you whippersnapper up.
Yeah, I always feel like I've got one speed. Basically, on a scale of 1 to 10, I can only play volleyball at a 10. So if I can't do that, then what's the point? I can identify with that feeling.
Tom, what was it like for you to watch that 2008 team, a lot of the guys you knew and, you know, really come together and win the gold medal?
Oh, that was awesome. That was, you know, it was just shocking to see, you know, Loy and Millar and Hoff out there and it's blocking substitutions. It was a lot of fun watching them. It's even more interesting watching Kevin, like, doing the announcing or hearing Kevin doing the announcing. It was like, I say, McGee, you're pretty much the same person on and off the court, but, you know, when Kevin gets into, like, announcer mode, it, like, changes his voice, and he's like,
yeah,
this is Kevin
really
Barnett. From...
Yeah, I'm a little bit different. I tell people sometimes that from the 2000 team, from my time on the team from 97 to 2000 versus my time on the team when I basically came back in 03 and 04, and the way I've been in touch with the team since, it's a far different experience for me. I know in particular I've mentioned dealing with Lambert. I don't think Mike really knows who I am at this point because I felt like I was a very different person having kids, getting hurt, and not being quite as immature as I was back in the late 90s.
Yeah, I see all you guys are like just procreating like crazy now. Saying, you know, generations of volleyball players for the future, you know, Hoff and Loy and you.
Yeah, Hoff's looking for 5 scholarships.
That's
on his side of things. Well, hey, Tommy, before we let you go, I wanted to get your expertise on one other thing and get some recommendations out there for our listeners, our loyal listeners. What TV shows should they not be missing? Because you are a connoisseur of television.
Well, I mean, if you haven't watched Battlestar Galactica, you should all watch Battlestar Galactica.
Thank you. Fine. This is why I brought them on, because no one understands me and how much I love
BSG. I like Sons of Anarchy. I've really gotten into that lately.
You have got...
People get freaked out by BSG because it's a science fiction. It's a drama, people, set in a science fiction atmosphere. It's fathers, sons, love, religion, culture,
haven't
everything.
Seen it yet.
Amen, brother.
And also, unless if you're offended by blood, violence, sex and whatnot, do not watch this show. But if you haven't watched Spartacus, start with Blood and Sand, watch Spartacus. Dave McKenzie, you guys know Dave.
Of course.
He was on my, I hate to bring up Facebook, we're Facebook friends, and I posted on there, please watch Blood and Sand. And like, he just posted on my wall like 3 days ago, amen to Spartacus, it is awesome. it's kind of like 300, like the overly CGI, but they kind of embrace it, so you don't really think about it.
Okay, so
Spartacus, Blood and Sand.
All right.
Yep.
Hey, Tom.
You're a BSG fan, Barney?
Oh, yeah, dude. I went through the entire thing. I was just jonesing for more, and I actually felt like that was the best conclusion to a series that I've seen. I mean, I felt satisfied walking away from it rather than kind of missed.
Absolutely. The show was so good.
Tom, do you remember what team ended your career in 93?
Yeah, I remember Verna Klum leaking, overruling my ball. I think I did it over Coley into the corner, and she overruled the line judge.
Yeah, it was Marvin Hall, actually. It was great.
Oh, yeah.
Another hometown call for the Ridge.
Yeah, and I remember, like, you know, a ball's in by like a foot both ways. They overruled it, and you guys have wound up winning, and, you know.
Yeah, it was amazing. Would have given
them the highlight of your career. Congratulations.
Yeah, it was. Would have given him game 3.
I think he did come in first serving sub that game or something that game.
Yeah, so. I was, actually.
Well
that was
done.
That was the glorious year for me where I got to come in and serve for Craig Hewitt.
I still quote Matt Unger a lot. in his infamous line, can we curse on this show?
Kind of beep it out, maybe.
I'll PG-13 it.
Yeah.
When Matt Unger always says, potential is French for you haven't done deuce yet.
Ah, that's
it. That is such a great line.
I love it. Well, hey, Tom Sorensen, we appreciate you coming on the show. And weird that it's 20 years since he won a national championship.
But he was one of the best players in those 4 years of all time, a great All-American.
Still one of the best arms ever.
Ever. Love him.
Tommy, thanks a lot.
I can't believe I'm aware of them now.
I know.
I put on my Facebook, like, I'm doing aware of them now, like I'm the lead singer of White Lion or something. You know?
Thanks a lot, Tommy. Good to hear your voice.
Amazing the impact I had in that game he remembers I was a serving sub.
You love it when people remember you.
A couple dancing float aces. No, we were friends back then. That's why he remembers. Of course he knew what I was doing. But yeah, honestly, I knew that he would remember that because Lee LeGrand still brings that up. They got over – literally, Barney, the ball was in by 2 feet. We get the call.
From Marvin Hall? He's a Pepperdine homer. What are you talking about?
He said Verna overruled Marvin. So either way, whatever it was. But I remember that ball and then us going on to win in four and just the Pepperdine guys just, you know, they were trying to defend the title.
That was it.
They weren't as good
as
the year before.
I've got at
it was
least
a lawn, but
15 kills on my resume because of Marvin Hall.
Yeah.
Obviously, Marvin Hall.
There's no question. Well, you know, he's a Northridge guy too. I mean, when we were at the Matadome, if we were at home and he was reffing, good for a few points. I remember when they beat us in 92. He talked about that. They hadn't beaten us yet during that little era and they beat us at our place in four, and I remember we were a couple games ahead. We were in first place at that point, and they went flying by. They got that automatic game to play Long Beach State. They talked about one easy in the semifinal and then beat Stanford.
Think
in
about
three
that team, though.
Finals.
Okay, Dane Blanton on the outside, Alon Grinberg on the outside, Sorensen in the opposite.
Chip McCaw setting
as a freshman, Lila Grand in the middle,
Dwayne Cameron.
That's a pretty good team.
Yeah, you look back now, once again, just like 93, I said UCLA was better. Pepperdine was better.
Yeah.
When you look at it now, they're just a better team.
That is a pretty good squad right there.
Yeah.
Every one of those guys had some success somewhere else.
They were all back the next year except for Alon.
Yeah. One and done.
Yeah.
We're not sure where he went.
He went
to
the
Army?
Yeah, I mean, he was making millions playing overseas, and he was 29, so.
Yeah, I always didn't like that about Yuval Kotz. He's 27 when I'm playing against him. He's been playing professionally for like 4 or 5 years. Forget the fact he was in the European system where he had touch with professional players from the time he was in high school. Like, yeah, you know what? If I played 4 or 5 years in the national team and went back to college, I'd be pretty good too.
Yeah, I think.
So,
that,
whatever.
That's a funny line by him. I can't believe I'm aware of they now.
Yeah.
We got that. Can we clip that and put that in there?
I just like talking to Todd because I have not seen the man the last day of practice.
Sounded the same.
That was
still the same personality. He's so funny, and he really was, man. He was so damn good in college.
Oh, he's got such a pure arm. I mean, Tommy, chicken legs and a good arm. It's
beat Coley out classic. Freshman of the year 90, too. I mean, he's an All-American every year.
Dude, just a fantastic arm, and I don't know. I totally get what he's saying about not wanting to play because you can't do it the way you could before.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that, even though I feel in my mind, if I get my body to cooperate, I could still do it like I could do it before. I don't think any athlete ever gives that away. I mean, we'll be 80 years old, and I'll still feel like if you give me 6 months, I'll be back.
You know, Jordan watches the NBA and is like, I could school all of you fools.
For sure.
Every single one of
them. Even though he's 50
especially
pounds
heavier. Especially the Bobcats who are god-awful.
You wonder, do people hug Michael Jordan and go, oh, I thought you'd be thinner?
I think
Michael's a little heavy these days.
Well, he said that when he was done playing, he wanted to get a pot belly because he was tired of working out.
Oh, he did it.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want to do.
Like,
he's Michael Jordan.
Well, true. When it's nothing but steaks and
cigars.
Yeah, when you're done.
Yeah. Do what you want.
Yeah. Magic Johnson, same thing.
You got to worry
like
about
one and a half of Magic Johnson. Never shredded.
I worry about Shaq.
Holy smokes.
I mean, that guy's just big to begin with.
Talking 450. Can we go 450 on him? Couple years from now,
it's tough being that big, man. I think you got all that money. You got to get a nutritionist. You got
to. Well, yeah.
I mean, all those guys.
No, they just go to the steakhouse. You should have a personal chef still, shouldn't you?
And they do. They have to. Have to.
Shaq's
that kind of money.
Tell them to ease up on the butter. Go with some greens. I mean,
remember Jordan plumped up. I don't know what he is now, but
he is. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
He would still.
Sorry, I was on the message board. I tuned you out.
He would still light people up.
Oh, I still couldn't beat Michael.
No.
That one executive from Chicago did, and it made YouTube sensation. But
and Jordan had him killed.
You haven't heard from him since.
Yes, you've never seen
That's
him.
Right.
Guy didn't show up for work the next day.
Hey, still to come, the AVCA College Volleyball Weekly. We also have Kathy DeBoer joining us here on the program. Just a program note, we will not have a show next week. There will be no show next Monday, but in 2 weeks we will be back because I will not be here next week. I will be in the Virgin Islands on a boat playing that song, I'm on a Boat by Lonely Island.
Do you know that song? No. Sorry. Continue.
Go ahead.
No, the I'm on a Boat.
Are you talking about the one with the
SNL guys?
SNL
guys.
Yeah.
That was up
Lonely,
for,
Lonely Island.
That was up for a Grammy.
No, it was.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Not
that.
This year. Whatever. A couple
years
ago, yeah.
You know how many views, I Just Had Sex has had on YouTube? The song with Akon with Lonely Island? Have you heard that song?
No.
It is an awesome song. Go up, YouTube it right now. It's a fantastic song.
I can't listen to it without the listeners listening to it. I'm sure it's not PG.
We could play a little bit of that.
Good luck, Kevin. I cursed on the show last week, and now you're...
At least Tom went.
It's all going to hell. Have we talked about Reed yet? It's an hour, 7 minutes.
One week he put in, and he's not here now. He just...
But it's the first time we haven't mentioned his name, I don't think, for 67 minutes.
You think he's hurt?
I didn't know
where he was.
He was mentioned in the intro.
Oh, he was?
Yeah. I mean,
Ken Stephens mentions him every week.
Yeah, every single time.
I was trying to look up here real quickly. I will. The number of views that those Lonely Island things get. The number of views is simply amazing.
Do you know that they get paid? If you get to a certain amount of views on YouTube, you get paid.
Here you go. Charlie Bit My Finger, which you may have seen.
Thanks for listening.
Kid and his little brother.
Appreciate it.
I do. I'm with you. I'm going to pick that up, dude.
Someone put it on the...
419 million views.
What?
Million.
Let me see that.
This is this kid's little brother biting him. 419 million views.
Can't be that funny.
Okay, I Just Had Sex featuring Akon, 155 million views. How about that? That'll make you some money. There are whole series now that are just on YouTube. They're sitcoms that people do on YouTube, and they take in seven figures.
After the show, look up Kenny Powers' K-Swiss commercials.
They are awesome.
I watch them. You watch the show when it's on HBO, or you don't have TV.
Yes.
You know, the show,
yeah,
no,
I did that.
Okay, the show is
I
so
killed
good.
You.
The show is
Eastbound
so
and Down?
Yeah, Eastbound and Down.
I want to watch it. I think it's on YouTube.
And that's how I got into Sons of Anarchy, was Netflix.
That's
and
how
people
I
were telling
it.
Me how great it is. So I just, I mean, literally I've watched
I told
26
you.
Episodes.
It's a great,
it's the best show
it's
out.
It's a fantabulous show.
I'm at the end of season two right now.
Only
10
to go. I'm done, and I'm a little ticked because I have to pay $1.99 or $2.99 on
Oh, because season four... It's on iTunes, but not Netflix?
Right.
Will it come on Netflix?
Eventually.
Okay.
I'm really jonesing
like
for it right
years.
Now. And I'm thinking
I'm
about taking care of my personal
so
business this way.
Yeah, I know.
Don't you
too.
Start thinking about it. This would be a lot easier if we just went over there and just messed them up.
You know what I was thinking? Like, you watch that show, and all of a sudden you're like at the store, and some guy looks at you, and you think, like, you got to have payback or something. Like, I thought these guys were looking at me yesterday. I was picking up a sandwich at Pacata, the local Hermosa Beach. And
you thought they were eyeballing
me? Yeah, they're eyeballing me, and, you know. My daughter. What do I got to do about this? Okay, I gotta get
you were wondering
back.
If
yeah.
they were Mayans.
Are they in another gang? I mean, it's amazing that show. What it does to you.
I want to start an MC. I mean, that makes me just want to start an MC.
Yeah.
We'll start shaking down local businesses. You know, good
Can
stuff
we do
for
CC,
$1,000
a cruiser
month.
Club and just cruise around on our cruisers instead of motorcycles. If I don't have one.
I don't think it's going to be quite as scary.
With like a kid's seat on it.
And we'll just have T-shirts with our club emblem on the back.
Wow.
Would you go tattoo that big on your back? Ooh.
Can we talk about that, too, by the way? I don't think we've talked about that yet. Brooke Hanson tattoo?
We talked a little bit about it. I'm not sure how big she is on this idea, so we're going to have to, you know, I mean, obviously
Can I
she's
ask,
seven figures, maybe. I'm going to have to talk to her about it.
What's your price for a DJ Ruscha tattoo on your back?
How big?
$1 million, I'm in for sure.
How big?
Like, if I gave you $1 million, you would put a DJ Ruscha
tattoo? Yeah, absolutely, 100%, yeah.
$1 million.
Yeah, do whatever you want me to
start
do.
Start saving tomorrow.
Okay.
That's awesome. I'm glad that's
do I have to do like a tramp stamp, or can we put
no,
like,
no,
higher
put, like,
back like Sons of Anarchy
across.
So it
looks
cool? Okay.
Kevin, what's your number? On your chest, DJ Ruscha.
On my chest?
Yep.
How big?
On your chest.
One peck, two pecks? I have to go like prison style across?
Yeah, I mean.
Like a giant necklace?
I was thinking all the way across, but we could just go one peck.
First of all, we got some good stuff here. Reed did win his Champions League match yesterday. We found that out from Cam Curran. Ed Bond had probably the line of the day that said, I'm on season three of Yo Gabba Gabba.
Also on Netflix.
Kevin still hasn't given me his number yet.
On one peck.
One peck, DJ Ruscha.
After taxes, $500,000.
You could do a lot with that cake.
After
bud.
Taxes. All right, listen, we've got a guy on the line who we've had on the show before. I think this is Matty Boyce. He's making his bid already for Fifth Man of the Year 2012. by listening on a Delta flight a couple of weeks ago, and now we have word that he's made it to the Playboy Mansion, and we have an insider's report from Hugh Hefner's headquarters.
Matt?
Well, thanks, Reed.
Someone's talking.
Gone. Scared. That was Reed Pretty's email to me that we had to get Matty Boyce.
Riveting.
On the line.
Was he really at the Playboy Mansion?
Allegedly. And Reed said, thanks for the personal mentions. He must still be listening.
I want to throw out there, though, that just because you go to the Playboy Mansion, like people can rent it out for their own parties, it doesn't mean it's a Playboy Mansion party. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Just throwing it out there. But, I mean, just to say that you've been there is cool. I've never been there.
Yeah, I agree. Rosenthal has no shot at defending his title.
I would like to throw out there that Dustin Avall bought a Net Live tee, and nobody else that was up for an award has bought a Net Live tee.
Yeah, Rosenthal constantly giving me grief.
Could Jay Hossack be in the running, or is he more on the show because he's a contributor for ABCA?
He's part of the show now.
He's kind of part of the show. So he can't really win that award.
No. He was in the trivia contest, though.
Yeah.
At San Antonio, so that was good.
He and Sonny probably have the best chemistry. I think the men's AVCA, with those two going at it all the time. The women's is very informative because we have about three or four people, and you have to cover a lot more ground. But the men's is pretty funny because those two just get after it with
each other. Let's get to it.
Oh, are they here? Are they already on?
They are here. And we have the music. It still pains me to play it all these years later. But the UCLA Bruins still sit atop the standings, so we play their music, and Mike Sondheimer pogos in his office right as he joins us for the ABCA College Volleyball Weekly, the best of what was in the world of college volleyball, and the best of what will be. Our correspondents from across the nation, Jay Hossack from Penn State, and Mike Sondheimer from...
I throw up in my mouth when I hear this song.
There you go. Speaking of throwing up in your mouth, we'll get back to YouTube videos later. Gentlemen, welcome once again to the Net Live. We always appreciate when you guys come on and fight with each other.
We don't fight. We're best friends.
Where's Jay? Where is Jay?
I'm right here.
There he is.
I'm here. I love Sondy.
All right, gentlemen. Last week we were talking about what would be great, and it was Pep versus USC, and Jeremy was there. He said it was good for two sets and not so much after that.
I said games, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you, DJ Rosé, for saying games. Thank you.
That's great.
Hey, Jeremy, become a true broadcaster, then you'll be saying sets.
No, I'm not going to. It's not proper to call it sets.
All right, we'll have this battle later.
Let's continue with your college volleyball weekly.
All right.
Get out of the way so Sonny can talk, Kevin.
Sonny. Tell us and what it means.
It was kind of a predictable week. Everything went well, but there were some close matches. Long Beach State had a real shot and let Stanford get away in five. But Santa Barbara gave UCLA a battle, but Bruins prevailed in four. And Irvine won twice in Hawaii. And Penn State did their job and swept their teams. In the Midwest, Lewis had a big win. But pretty predictable over the week, I think. Jay?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I thought Lewis showed that they were, at least for the moment, the top dog in the MEVA. Ohio State beat IPFW, Arnie's Army in four. That's going to be a team, I think, that over the course of the year could end up like a Pepperdine as well, where they're kind of figuring some things out. Their player, they got a freshman setter from Puerto Rico who's really good, and he's moving the ball around a lot. And Arnie's Army always comes back at the end of the year and has something to say. So I would keep an eye on IPFW. As for the EIBA, Sacred Heart beat George Mason in five. Harvard versus Princeton, an Ivy League battle.
Harvard's
right
good.
There. Harvard is very good. We're going to see them this weekend. They beat Princeton in three, and they also beat Cal Baptist in four. So Harvard is looking they got a couple kids on their team from California, a lot of them actually, and they're looking to do some damage. I'm not overlooking anybody in the EIBA this year.
Hey guys, what happened to Cal Baptist? I see they're 1-7. Didn't they used to always be really, really good and get some guys from out of the country? And
well,
I know some turmoil with the program. Can you guys shed a little?
There's no turmoil. Ryan McGuire was the head coach and had decided to move on to pursue some time with his family. The thing about Cal Baptist that everybody doesn't understand is that they're an NAI or were an NAIA program. They had a lot more scholarships than your average NCAA team. I think the number I heard was 8 or 9. And, you know, when most teams are dealing with 4.5, you know, the age restrictions are different. NAI, the professional, you know, pass is a little bit different. I mean, there's a lot of things that they try to view to even the playing field. And so you're dealing with guys that were playing, you know, on national teams back home and possibly for some professional teams here and there, playing against college kids that are 18 and 19 years old. That could be the real difference maker right there. And so I think now that Cal Baptist has a new coach, first-year head coach, Alan Vince, from my high school, South Pasadena, no less. He is kind of doing a trial by fire and figuring things out. And he's got some good kids on the team, but now they're dealing with 4.5 scholarships and they're dealing with the NCAA rules. I think it's going to take him a couple years to figure it out again.
All right, Jay, moving over to you guys and your record. We wished you luck, although you didn't need it, and it seems like you should be holding practices after these matches. You defeated Rutgers, Newark, and Nidget, New Jersey Industrial Tech, 3-0.
Oh, be careful how you pronounce that word. You might get some bad emails later on. Yeah, Rutgers is a team on the downward swing, if you ask me. They were Division I, still are at the moment. However, I think in two seasons they dropped down to Division III. So they had a new coach this year in the fall, and I think unfortunately there's kind of a team that has lost their way. When they get to Division III, they'll be pretty good. But right now they're just kind of battling and hanging on. New Jersey Institute of Technology, somebody made fun the other day on my Facebook and said, when are we playing ITT? But I think they're not a bad team. They get a lot of foreign kids. That school's actually really good for engineering and tech, and they get some good kids. They're not too bad. They went 5 with San Diego.
It's funny you say that because I think you have DeVry on your schedule this week.
No. DeVry dropped their program. They're no longer NCAA status. So
the top 10 remained the same, it seemed, all the way to number 8. And then you had a little swap there, Pepperdine moving to number 9. Previously being at number 8, yet if I'm reading that right, no. Pepperdine moved to number 9, sorry, from being number 10, and you had Long Beach State moving down to number 10 from number 9, Cal State Northridge holding steady at 11. So your top 5 is UCLA, UC Irvine, BYU, Stanford, and Penn State. Gentlemen, give us something to look forward to this week. What are the interesting storylines coming up? It was kind of a light week of matches.
No, there's a biggie, I think.
Last week.
There's a big one, though. I think Stanford at UC Irvine will be the big one for the week because Stanford beat BYU twice. They struggle a little bit with Long Beach. I think the interesting thing is that Irvine, with Kevin Tilley now healthy and playing awesome, they've got the best outside hitting tack in the country. And I'm interested to see when Stanford comes in there if they can play with Irvine and be able to beat them. Otherwise, it becomes more of a 3-team race in the MPSF than a 4-team race. Going back to Roche, they missed the game of the week last week, or the set of the week, whatever you want to do. San Diego beat BYU a 42-40 set last weekend.
Yeah, that's right. San Diego's not doing too bad this year, and so there's some good wet matches going on out there. I think it's proving, and Sandy, you can agree or disagree, I think you'll agree with me, that anybody can beat anybody on any given night this week.
Right. No, we've definitely agree with that. And I think when they get down to USC first week of May and good tickets are available, I think that any of the 4 teams coming in are going to have a shot. I don't think that the West is going to be that much ahead of the Midwest or the East, where there can't be an upset that first night on the 2 West teams.
Hey, did you guys hear Tom Sorensen on the show?
Yeah.
I believe it's been
great interview.
20 years since the Dine won the title.
That was actually big time win over upsetting Cardinal.
I just love that you call it the Dine, because that's a great name right there.
Everything's always fine at the Dine. I think Jim Herrick said that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree with Sunday. I think Stanford, UC Irvine is going to be the call, at least out there, that I want to watch. Stanford has been on the road, I think, the whole season.
Yeah, they've been doing great on the road. So that's if they get by that match, they're right there, a contender for the title.
Yeah, they're battle tested and ready to go. I think in the Midwest, I'm watching to see what Loyola does against George Mason. George Mason's struggling a little bit, but Loyola doesn't seem to be picking up the pace at all, and I'm a little bit concerned that they're going to kind of drop off here if they don't start getting a couple of wins. And then for us, we got Harvard and Sacred Heart. Should be fun, and it should be a good week of volleyball all around.
All right, I'm going to start with you, Jay. What's the toughest place to play, Midwest or East Coast, crowd-wise,
What's the best atmosphere? Don't put Penn State in that answer.
No. You know, actually, I wouldn't put Penn State anywhere near there. We've got some very respectful fans. If you've ever been out here, the crowd that comes in here, you know, albeit the student sections are always fun, the type of crowd we get is very respectful. And so it's not a really intimidating place to play, I guess is the best way to put it. The worst or the most intimidating place I've been to yet was Loyola's alumni gym. That place, when it was around, was, for all intents and purposes, it was like going down to Puerto Rico or going overseas and playing in Poland, where the fans are just unruly. And It was a big, huge home court advantage. I mean, there's been lots of teams that have gone there that have walked away, been a little bit bruised and a little bit battered. But now they don't play in that gym anymore. They tore it down and they built a new one. It's really nice. And, you know, they hopefully can get some bigger crowds in there. They're not right on top of you like before.
Yeah. So right now, is there a team that kind of that you go, you know what, it's going to be a fun atmosphere and we go there? Is it Ohio State?
Ohio State's fun. They got a big gym. They unfortunately don't. You know, it's kind of like Pauley Pavilion or, you know, UOP's. What's the name of that gym up there that they have? Anyways, UOP's gym where it's kind of cavernous, and if you don't get a big crowd, it kind of looks empty. So unfortunately, those aren't. I don't think those are the places you would think would be as aggressive fan-wise than most. But I don't know. What do you think, Sandy?
I think BYU. I think because they're on top of you. I think it's a place designed for volleyball. I think it's just a fun place to play. And believe me, for a nice group of people, they can get on you, and they're pretty colorful, especially in the end zones.
Good stuff, guys.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I remember playing there. They were a little bit rude to our fans. I wasn't too happy with the treatment of our parents when it came to BYU.
Actually, it might be interesting if somehow UCLA ends up, you know, winning the league. They're playing in the Wooden Center, which seats about 2,000. That's for women's volleyball, it's pretty much of an army when the Bruin women played, like Cal and Stanford and SC. So if they end up hosting the MPSF, that would be a sold-out packed place to be pretty awesome.
Now, here's a question, Sandy. If UCLA does host, do they move it out of the Wooden Center to somewhere a little bit bigger because it only holds 2,000?
They sit in there, and each school gets their 100, and it's first come, first serve, and it's going to be wild in there.
That would be an insane place to play
exactly.
For that kind of a title.
For sure. That'd be absolutely wild to get to the NCAAs.
Huh. Gentlemen, what's going on with you guys?
We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, we appreciate it, as always.
Hey, how are you guys doing? How's life in the big city over there?
Yeah. Well, Barney got a job.
Yeah, I heard about that. Are we going to do some motocross stuff now on the show? What's going on?
I do Supercross now, so I do all their online content. You can check that out.
That's a tremendous gig. I mean, that's a worldwide potential sport for you.
Absolutely.
Bigger than volleyball eventually.
Talk about real sports that have fans.
A lot more dirt.
970,000 plus Facebook fans.
More dirt than sand on the beach.
That's that. Oh, yeah.
That is crazy. Wow.
Yeah, it is wild. It's an amazing sport.
And it gets posted on Monster's page. Monster, how many fans do you think they have? Take a stab in the dark. Monster Energy on Facebook.
4.5 million.
Jeremy says 5 million. You said 4.5. Chris?
2 million.
2 million? Try 14 million.
Wow.
That's a real
wow.
number. 14 on the Nielsen scale, for crying out loud. We're talking about how many people watched the Olympic Games. 15 million, the men's final in 2008. 14 people. So
that
anyway.
Is an unbelievable number.
That's just above the number of people that listen to this show.
Yeah. I was going to say nice. Jay's fan club on his Facebook site. It's getting pretty close.
Oh, yeah. You know, on a good day, I had to prune a couple the other day. It wasn't too much fun, so I might be a little bit below that now.
You wouldn't need a job, Barney.
Gentlemen, we'll let you go and get back to your pruning at your Facebook page or whatever it is that you college coaches do and administrators, who knows what they're up to. Get that Mahjong back going on your monitor there, Sandy.
Definitely.
All right.
I'm looking at Geeter's career on my monitor right now, so it's getting bigger and bigger.
Hey, programming note for you guys, 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks' time till we're back on the air. We'll have lots to talk about.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good one.
All right.
See you, Sandy.
You guys.
Take care.
Bye.
College Volleyball Weekly, sponsored by the AVCA. That was Mike and Jay, our correspondents. You'll hear from them in 2 weeks, because I'm not hosting this show from the Virgin Islands, people. They got internet on the boat, but I'm not bringing all this stupid gear. We'll be right back. Kathy DeBoer coming up on the other side. go. Take it back. The darkness, baby.
You're welcome.
How about that for a reference? Every minute, every hit the high note. You got another high note coming?
Sure. You got me in a spin, but
everything is okay. One hit wonder. Amazing one hit wonder.
There you go. Touching you.
Touching Sing it, Chris. Come on, you got that in you.
I can't get there, so I do.
All right. Good stuff. Hey, we want to remind you out there that the AVCA, the American Volleyball Coaches Association, is a big supporter of this program. We want you to visit avca.org. They have all kinds of information there, educational resources about the AVCA, SAND, divisions, men's, women's, indoor, all kinds of divisional coverage. They have lots of great stuff on that site. Check it out, avca.org. And they also run the convention that happens in December surrounding the Women's Final Four. They run a smaller convention. I don't think you can call it a convention, maybe more of a meeting surrounding the Men's Final Four. And we are always glad that they are involved with our program. To that end, we would like to bring on their executive director, Kathy DeBoer. We've had her on here several times. Kathy, with decades of experience in coaching and administration, worked for a variety of different schools back here in Lexington, Kentucky. She's not afraid to have an opinion, and that's why we like having her on this show. Welcome back into the Net Live once again to the home court, Kathy DeBoer. Hi, Kathy.
Kevin, how are you?
I'm well, sitting here with the guys in the home court on a Monday
Hi,
morning,
Kathy.
As usual.
Hi, guys.
Kathy, I wanted to start off, just talk about convention a little bit. The Net Live was there once again back in December, a huge event. It seems like it grows every year, the number of vendors and the number of courses that are offered. It's a lot of fun to be at convention, and before I started going a couple of years ago, I never realized how big that world was.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's amazing, you know, right? When the economy kind of went into recession, we hit some hot spots with our membership in terms of where we went. We went to Tampa, and then we thought we'd have a little bit of a dip in Kansas City, but we didn't. And it got even bigger in Kansas City and then Omaha. You know, we had 2450 is where we ended up in terms of attendees and vendors and everything else. It was about a 15% increase over last year, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. We appreciate you being there and appreciate what you bring to it.
Well, it's a lot of fun. It's not only an opportunity to see the Final Four, but I'd never realized all the coaching that's going on and the meeting of the minds and opportunity to hear from in sessions, whether it's Karch Karai or Hugh McCutcheon or Russ Rose or some of the other great coaching minds that are in the sport. And it's not just for women either. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on as it relates to the much smaller men's game. And I wanted to ask you that question. We were talking earlier to John Tawa of Prep Volleyball and talking about the incentives to participate. And, of course, with the Title IX discussion that we'll get into in a few minutes, do you think without the scholarships dollars there, would the AVCA have seen the growth that you have to convention, and would the girls' juniors world be what it was without the 10,000 scholarships that are out there every year?
I mean, I think the scholarships are definitely part of it. I mean, if you, you know, and in fact, you can look across sports. You know, I mean, football has more scholarships than anybody. If you look at high school participation, you know, football's at 1.2 million, and it just blows everybody else away. It's twice the number of kids that participate in any other sport. And but if you look at football scholarships out there, they've got twice to three times as many scholarships as everybody else. And so it's not a direct correlation, but it certainly does make a difference. I mean, lacrosse, for instance, is one of the fastest-growing sports right now, but there's not a huge amount of scholarship money available. There's lots of growth of that sport at the Division III level and Division II level. Michigan just added a men's team, which is one of the first in the Big Ten. So, you know, you can't draw a straight line, but certainly scholarships are incentives. I mean, you know, professional opportunities, are also incentives. I think that's one of the things that you've seen with soccer. There's two or three different professional leagues, and those are incentives that drive participation all the way up and down the food chain.
Hey, Kathy, can you tell us about the, you said Michigan added a men's?
Yeah, they added a men's lacrosse team. They were the first school in the Big Ten to add men's lacrosse. And under a new athletics director, they're adding women's lacrosse next year. And so, you know, there's lots of speculation as to whether this is going to become a trend in the Big Ten is to add men's lacrosse.
Kathy, you were on the show last week, Game Changers Live with Bev Oden, as was I. I was on there for an hour before they even let anyone else in the air so they could pick on anybody but me.
you make such a nice target.
Yeah. Well, I say some stupid things sometimes that end up even on our own show. Anyways, I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that argument that's been going back and forth. Bev Oden's now written a response article to an article that was written by Penn State and their paper there about the effect of Title IX on men's college volleyball and the lack of growth that exists for men's college volleyball.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think there are two things I think there are two things that are ignorant to say about men's non-football and basketball, all right? One of them is to say that it's all Title IX. The other one is to say that Title IX doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, both of them are false.
Okay. Yeah, the world is gray, not black and white.
Yeah, I mean, both of them, you know, they're not right. In terms of that it's all Title IX, it's like, well, that's crazy. I mean, you know, you got 110, 120 in Division I opportunities that go to guys in the sport of football, and those are still guys. You know, the whole argument that you hear all the time, well, you know, we actually need to create a third gender. We need to have opportunities for men, we need to have opportunities for women, and then we have to have opportunities for football players. You know, and that football opportunities shouldn't count as opportunities for males. I mean, you know, but, you know, they do right now, all right? There aren't three genders, and so the number of playing opportunities that go into the guy side of it, because primarily of the sport of football. And then it's a point that you've made that I think is well taken and is absolutely true. 40 years after Title IX, we know now some stuff we didn't know when it was passed. We didn't know when it was passed, if girls were given the opportunity to compete in athletics, how many would want to do it? So the assumption was made that just the same number as boys if they were given the opportunity. Now we have two generations of girls that have been given the opportunity, and that's not true. And there aren't as many. So if you have a golf team and for men and for women, you're in almost all cases going to have more guys on the golf team. If you look at voluntary participation on sports teams, whether it's soccer or swimming or track, you have more men that are walking on than you have women. And so, you know, what does that mean? Okay. And then I guess the third point that I would make to say that the lid on the growth of men's volleyball is all Title IX, that's just absolutely not true. Because if you look, since Title IX was passed in 1972, men's participation opportunities have grown. They haven't grown as quickly as women's, but they've grown at all three divisions. And there are men's sports that have grown much, much quicker than men's volleyball. I mean, soccer being one, lacrosse being another. You know, and there are men's sports opportunities that have shrunk a lot more than volleyball. I mean, wrestling has lost about 30% of the programs that they used to have. You know, men's swimming has lost a significant number. Men's gymnastics is almost down to,
yeah,
I think they're down to 15 or something like that. So, you know, so you got a lot of things mixed in here. You know, when you talk about Title IX, a lot of things that are impacting it, and a lot of things that are impacting men's volleyball.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of things that are going to impact individual sports and the choices mm-hmm. kids make. I mean, wrestling may be one of those mm-hmm. things that people mm-hmm. don't choose to do as much anymore. If you talk about a boxing and the mm-hmm. participation in boxing, but at the same time, MMA is coming up. To get it completely external to this discussion. But I wonder, you say Title IX is not a direct effect. I would argue that it has an effect through the scholarship limits, because how are you supposed to increase participation and desire at the junior level without that huge carrot out there? And it's not the only carrot to participating in junior girls club. But it certainly is a giant carrot that if you put 10,000 scholarships out there for boys every year, you would have a lot of people that would make the choice to participate in volleyball versus something else, and it certainly would drive.
Yeah.
Without that, how are you supposed to grow the collegiate game?
Yeah, again, if I made it sound as if I disagree that the scholarships are incentives, then I spoke incorrectly. I think the scholarships are incentive. But the issue really becomes chicken and egg. What comes first? Does participation come first and then scholarships, or do scholarships come first and then participation?
But you have participation at the club level where it has grown immensely, and these are people who are choosing to play when you start talking about the choice to play. And we got into a little bit that if you look at girls A, there's a lot more, or women's A, of club volleyball at the collegiate level. There's more A than there are A of men's. But if you go all the way through ABC or whatever their designations are, there are by far more men's teams already organizing themselves and choosing to play the sport. So I think that the desire appears to be there for the sport.
Yes, to a certain extent. We track on this real closely, and because it's very much of a part of the mission of the AVCA is the development of the sport, whatever shape and form and gender and surface and that kind of thing. And I know just in the 25 years that I've been here in Kentucky and looking at the upper Midwest, I mean, we've had ebbs and flows in terms of interest of boys. I mean, we used to have boys volleyball in the state of Kentucky. The Catholic boys schools in Louisville all had teams. Then there was a decrease in the number of guys that wanted to play, and so they don't have teams anymore. We're trying to get those started again. Indiana, used to have 60 high school boys teams. Now they have under 40. Now they're starting to come back a little bit again. As opposed to Illinois, started out a little bit ago with 60. Now is over 220. Wisconsin is growing very, very in a very healthy way. Pennsylvania is a little bit flat. I mean, I visited with the Pennsylvania High School Athletics Association folks when I was on my way to the men's tournament last year, and just said, where are we with boys volleyball? And boy, they said, well, we love what we've got and stuff, but we can't get part of the state. And to be honest with you, I'm ignorant about whether it was the northern part or the southern part, but what part of the state there's a lot of play, and the other part there's not. And they said the same thing that, I get tired of hearing is the sport that's growing the quickest here at our high schools is lacrosse for boys. So, we have to look at different places. We have to try and encourage club opportunities. We're very hopeful that the sand game, beach game, depending on where you are in the country, if you're by a beach, you call it beach. If you're not, you call it sand. But that will be something that jump starts men's participation again, in certain different parts of the country, in the southeast. Can we get boys volleyball going in the southeast? Because they can be outdoors and be on the beaches, and is that something that can feed into the growth of it in that part of the country?
I, for one, will be shocked if men's sand gets created at all, if there's any discussion of that, especially considering the resistance there was to women's sand, even though there obviously would be a demand for that given the overflow from the indoor game. I can't imagine somebody saying, let's start men's sand.
There's two programs right now, Grand Canyon University and Weber in the NAIA. Both are talking about starting a men's sand program. It'd be pockets and everything else.
Yeah, it'll be like club volleyball. There'll be some support. They'll be here. They'll be there. But as far as it being an NCAA sport, I can't imagine that happening. I know this is a bigger discussion. We went on for an hour on Game Changers Live. You can check that out. Bev Odin's show, that's another Blog Talk product, so check that out, Game Changers Live. I did miss the end of Kathy's interview. I have to go back and listen to that. But Kathy, while we have you here, let's talk about some of the other initiatives that the AVCA is pushing forward. Give our listeners a little bit of insight into what's happening there with your organization in Kentucky.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're setting up for the spring conference, which is what we do at the men's championship. It's kind of our counterpoint part to the convention, and it's only 4 years old, but it's gone from an event that was about 50 to about 200 now. Lineup that is just incredible from an educational standpoint. You know, we've got we're going to repeat the Why We Win session that was so popular at the women's with elite men's coaches, and John Spraw and Al Skates have both said that they'd be willing to are going to participate that in that. Got Kevin Hambley, Mick Haley, and Mike Seeley, three of the four that participated in the final four on the women's side, all are going to be doing sessions. Karch Kirai, Hugh McCutcheon, Alan Knipe, hopefully he's going to be playing in a qualifier in the United States, which I'm sure you guys have spent time talking about.
We heard he's the site. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, have they made a final decision?
You know, I keep hearing things through the grapevine. I have not seen an official press release unless I missed it. I keep hearing things through the grapevine that it's going to be in Long Beach.
Okay, all right. So we got it because it was between us and Mexico when I was at the USAV board meetings here.
Maybe.
So I haven't seen anything official yet either. So we would have seen it. I'm positive we would be shouting it from the mountaintops if we knew. But anyway, so the men have a qualification that's going on right at the same time. But so we're working on that. We're also, you know, this is the first year of sand volleyball as a varsity sport on the women's side, and there's 15 varsity teams this year. But because it's we're inventing it as we go, if you will, not beach volleyball. That's been around for a long time, but how are we going to play this as a collegiate sport, and how do you make it into a team sport? And so there's been a lot of things around that we've been working on pretty hard. First men's D3 championship is the weekend of the 28th, 29th, and 30th of April at Springfield. First NCAA men's D3. I'm sorry, we've had the Moulton for almost 20 years. So we're working with them on putting together some events around that. So we stay pretty busy here. We're also going to be involved in the JVA World Challenge, which is one of the best opportunities for the best teams from Texas and the best teams from the Midwest and the juniors area to play against each other, because that event's in Houston this year. So,
well, we know you're busy, and we appreciate you making time to come here on the show and the support that you guys have shown for our program over the last couple of years. So thanks, Kathy.
Well, sure. Appreciate what you guys do, and we'll stay in touch for sure.
All right. Kathy DeBoer, executive director. I was going to get those mixed up. Executive Director of the American Volleyball Coaches Association, based out of Kentucky. Still to come here on the Net Live as we wrap it up on a Monday. We've got Matt Boyce reporting in. Says he's been to the Playboy Mansion. Jeremy wants to know if it was a private event or an actual HEF event. We're going to find out. Not sure how that's volleyball related, but I'm sure Boyce will bring it around somehow. Then we'll wrap it up. A little news about Alex Jupiter and her career choice. Coming up here shortly. The Net Live, right back. You don't have to find the best college coaches. They find you at Spire Institute. Spire's postgraduate volleyball academy wants athletes. Spire delivers customized volleyball training and competition led by head coach John Hawks, athletic development with Michael Johnson Performance, and educational options all in Olympic-grade facilities. There is no better way to impress college coaches and increase scholarship opportunities. Spire Institute, postgraduate men's and women's programs in multiple sports. It's not taking a year off, it's adding a year to your future. Sign up today at spireinstitute.org. Welcome back in, and it live. This is like the J.A. Adonde Lounge music right here, DJ Roche. Welcome to the Net Live Lounge. I'll be your concierge, Kevin Barnett. What's in your shirt, kid?
Really? Kevin?
I've been looking at it since you took your shirt off.
Can I get some new ones for my Vegas trip coming up on Friday?
That's like the spy versus spy guy with wings in the middle. And
it's
then
Hugo
it says,
Boss
you got
shirt,
German.
Kevin. Suck it.
I wouldn't know anything about fashion.
No, I know, so I don't know what we're talking about.
Got a live shirt for me? Yeah, come on. Actually, Kevin has some here.
Yeah, you can have one today.
He's awesome.
And then at live here on the volleyballnetwork.com, we appreciate you communicating with us during the week, facebook.com.
How about Bevan J, point counterpoint in 2 weeks?
I want that to happen.
Because the chat room has been awesome during that whole interview.
They are fired up on the chat board.
I think
right
you
now.
Got an amen one time and a yes, Barney. People were happy with you
for
the first time ever in the history of the
discussion,
show.
And it's good. Talk about it. Just kidding. You're awesome.
Big thanks to our sponsors, ABCA, Volleyball Mag, Hurley, Spire Institute, all for being on board. We appreciate you all and your support for this program and what we do. Big news this week, Alex Jupiter says she's going to play beach. She said, wish me luck. Thanks. I want to get some sponsors. And as I change this lifestyle, my comment for her would be play overseas 6 months of the year, sponsor yourself. Okay, that's the only way it's going to make money at this point, Alex.
It's a curious career choice, especially with the state beach volleyball is in right now.
She's choosing with her lifestyle. She's not choosing with her head, and certainly not choosing with her pocketbook at this point when you look at the state of the two games.
She could be burnt out on indoor, though.
It very well could be, but, dude, it'll pay the bills. You could play indoor, ask John Rooney. Play indoor half the year, play beach the other half. It's a pretty good lifestyle in that, even if you're not going to be on the national team. I think that's the way to go. All right, let's bring him in because Geeter's packing up. He's got to go get his daughter. But here is our fifth man of the year candidate, the leading vote getter for 2012 thus far, Matt Boyce.
Gentlemen.
Hey, Matt.
How are we?
We're lovely. We hear you have been to a place where there are some lovelies.
I have. And there is a volleyball tie-in. There's a real one, and then there's one I'm going to make up. But you guys remember Chris Hopkins, Geeter? He coached LAAC for a while.
Absolutely.
Chris Hopkins is now the senior vice president over at Playboy.
That's a nice
also
job.
Also known as the man.
Wow.
He runs everything, including the Playboy mansion. So note to self. That's who you need to reconnect with, as I did.
That rat of Cal, actually.
Yep. He was setter for their club, men's club team. These stories always have to start with some kind of embellishment, and a volleyball tie-in was how great would it have been, and this was P. Diddy's post-Grammy party. How great would it have been if C. Thomas Howell and Lindsay Lohan just rolled in together and he was wearing the upside-down, side-out hat and the fluorescent shorts? I did not see C. Thomas Howell there. He's probably not been there since 92. Did not see Lindsay Lohan. Did see Craig Robinson, who you might know from Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah.
And the guy that worked downstairs for Dunder Mifflin The Office.
Yeah, love him.
And Eddie Gaffigy, who was the African-American vampire in the movie Twilight. And I said...
1 a.m., did he look like that?
His eyes turned red, he grew dreadlocks, and he turned into a vampire. It was pretty funny. I asked him, I said, so is it taking off after Twilight? He goes... Twilight did nothing for me. I got casted in a TV pilot for doing a play in L.A. True story.
That's just the way the entertainment industry is.
It did nothing for me.
It could mean nothing. You could be the biggest thing in the world, and it could mean nothing. Or you could be in some small thing, and it could catapult you.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool. P. Diddy was the host, and in his mind, hosting means I show up at 12:50 and walk up on stage and say hi and drop the mic and walk off. That'll be $50,000, please.
Did he say, sexual, chocolate, give it up?
No. He literally walked up on the stage, did his thing to the crowd, didn't sing, dropped the mic, and walked off.
Hey, Matt, I want to bring you back to volleyball here because I know that the club season getting underway, Vegas coming up, your wife, Melissa, very busy, and you once again back to the support group.
Yeah, so I last year I went as a good partner and basically a consultant to the club, to the Vegas tournament. This year I am actually going to a place that you would love, Kevin Barnett.
Paris Dirt Rider.
Indy Dealer Expo.
Nice.
Weekend. Yeah.
Yes.
Riveting.
Yep, I'm staying at Canterbury.
That sounds great. I know I got a little offer downstairs, $10 per year for Dirt Rider, and I asked myself, when I know Matt Boyce, why would I pay for Dirt Rider? I just
there's no reason. You should actually be featured in it.
Hey, now that I'm on Supercross Live, that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Entirely doable at this point.
I think you're a competitor now, so good luck to you.
Oh, shoot. All right, it's all off.
No, I'm kidding. So, yeah, Melissa and I were actually – Melissa did go to the event with me last night. In fact, I took a picture of her in the grotto and sent it to her, my father-in-law. So that'll be interesting when I see him at barbecue on Sunday. But, so she's gearing up for that. It's a big tournament for everybody, including Chris. And a lot of gym time there, a lot of gym time.
Well, with you out of town, I think it's going to be left to the lovely wife there, Chris, to lead. Well, what was the organization again? Spouses of Abuse or Abused Spouses of
Battered Spouses of Club Volleyball.
Yeah, that's right. BSCV. Something close to that.
Yeah, it's got a couple of the cells have gone dormant, but it's going to get resurrected here shortly because every weekend until Memorial Day weekend is a volleyball tournament.
Yeah.
Well, it's an all-encompassing lifestyle. Maybe, get a sitter, spend your weekends at the Playboy Mansion. Good luck.
Yeah, but I'm actually going to move in, I think, to the mansion.
Right on. Well, hey, we appreciate your call anytime and your bid to be
fifth man
of 2012.
All right, guys. Sorry, I'm not sorry. I went to the mansion last night. See ya.
All right.
Later, Matt.
Matt Boyce. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's been another fun day. We, of course, want to thank AVCA, Volleyball Mag, Hurley, and Spire Institute for their support of this program, making it come to you. Remember, next week, no show. Following week, we will be back. I will be tan.
Congratulations to Reed, by the way. He won a big match yesterday.
Big match for Reed.
See the photo Reed posted on Twitter?
I have not.
Him, the wife, and the kid in Red Square, freezing.
That's pretty cool. I've seen some other posts of him on like a G5.
You got to remember, Reed and Barney are not what they were.
They're not friends anymore.
There's just not a lot of communication going on.
Well, this show hasn't gone the way we hoped. You know, we were going to build this empire,
like,
and Chris came in and killed it.
It's kind of like what's happened with Sam Crow in season 2.
Now you're going the right way.
Are you with Jax?
Are you
with Clay? If you get to this past season, the season before last year, that final episode.
Yeah.
Someone told me the final episode of season 3. Someone told me the final episode of season 3.
It was either 3 or 4. I don't remember.
No, 4 is on now.
Insane.
Yeah, like
that's what a guy told me yesterday. My buddy told me yesterday, he goes, have you got season 3? I said, no, I'm almost at the end of season 2. He goes, the end of season 3 is the best television that I have ever watched.
It's unbelievable.
It's, I can't wait.
Clay, they just reunited in this last episode. They're on the same page right now.
How much do you hate the FBI agent?
Oh, you just want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you want to go where the deputy went.
Yeah.
Deputy Hale.
Yeah.
That might be fun.
Yeah.
You'll have to watch the show if you want
hate
to know what
lover,
we're talking
right?
about. Yeah, it'd be that kind of relationship with her, wouldn't it?
She's evil.
Big, bossy.
She's evil.
Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you just wait, dude. Evil.
She gets more evil?
Evil. Very evil, right, Jeremy? Are you where are you?
Because
don't tell me. I'm 36 in.
No, I'm caught up to wherever we are now.
Okay.
I've seen it all.
There's 39 episodes. There's 39 episodes.
Don't slow down. It's a good thing.
Okay.
And this show is a good thing, and we appreciate you being a fan of the program. Big thanks again to our sponsors. If you want to order a shirt and support our program, Vala Clothing, VALAclothing.com. Tune in every week and wear your shirt. Support this program. Jeremy, spin it up. We're out of here on a Monday. Sun is out. Time to be outside. Sorry to the rest of you that it's snowing finally in your part of the country. I'm Kevin. He's Jeremy. And Chris is on his way out. We'll see you in 2 weeks in that live.
I don't think y'all heard, man. I just want to say happy Valentine's Day. Every day is the 14th. Can y'all dig that? Now, when arrows don't penetrate, see. Cupid grabs a pistol. Yeah. Now look at here. He shoots straight for your heart. That's alright, y'all won't believe in me anyway, but...